Welcome, welcome, welcome to CORE Volunteer Training Tonight. It's a weekly webinar program of Citizens Climate Lobbies for newer volunteers to help you plug in to your advocacy throughout the greater United States and the larger world and to feel more effective in your work in your own communities. Tonight's topic is specifically prepared for preparing everyone for our upcoming Lobby Day in D.C. I'm your host, Brett Cease, and before we get started, I'd love to just take a moment to thank you for taking time to join us tonight. To get us through our wonderful webinar tonight, we have a wonderful guest speaker. We have none other than Amy Bennett, CCL's Director of Congressional Liaisons and Lobby Days. Amy trains volunteers and oversees the appointment setting for Capitol Hill meetings for annual Lobby Days. Knowing great strides can be made once you sit down with your members of Congress and their staff is intensely rewarding for Amy, and guiding volunteers literally and figuratively through the halls of Congress reminds her of what is possible when we are face-to-face with our elected officials. So we are so honored to have the person and the one that's working all the magic behind the scenes in coordinating all of our Lobby Day appointments joining us tonight. If we have done our job well, here is the agenda we'll be following. We're going to start with a quick review of really the importance of relationship building, do a little review of meeting roles. We'll have a chance to dive more into that in a specific webinar if you would like to have further discussion on that. We'll then mainly focus tonight on a role play actual lobby scenario. So you'll hear what this all sounds like put together in a meeting. So our learning goals to get us there are really threefold. We're hoping that as an attendee at the end of tonight's training, you'll better understand the planning process behind our meeting preparations with members of Congress and their staff. We hope that you'll be able to demonstrate what a respect-based relational meeting looks and sounds like, as well as why CCL chooses to take this approach in developing those relationships with our members of Congress. And then hopefully you'll also feel more prepared to, in your own meetings, feel confident in knowing where to go, to prepare yourself, to find that support and the tools and resources ahead of time. But without further ado, I'll pass it to you, Amy, and we'll jump in by providing a quick review of where we are and how to put this framework into action.
Thanks so much, Brett. So what's our goal in meeting with a member of Congress? It's really relationship building, and it's moving your member up the ladder of support for becoming a climate champion. And how do we achieve that? Through the CCL way, of course. It's respect and appreciation. We appeal to the best in others, as Gandhi did, and being for something. So what's our approach? It's finding common ground, and we look to build those bridges through three areas: shared values, a social connection, and places that we care about. So, of course, we're grounded in CCL's one rule, that's to treat everyone, even those who disagree with us, with respect, appreciation, and gratitude. And so, what are the nuts and bolts of the lobby team roles? Well, to begin, the central role for each of our meetings with members of Congress is the leader. The lobby team member who empowers everyone to share and to participate, especially the constituents who are in the meeting, so that we build capacity for our work. The lead might also facilitate transitions in the agenda for the meeting. If the leader's not the CCL liaison, then the leader's responsible for briefing the liaison after the meeting. The leader assigns the roles before the meeting. So here's an analogy that you might find useful. It's that of being a conductor for an orchestra. The CCL team leader is there to manage the meeting, but not to dominate the meeting. The leader's not necessarily the one who talks the most, but he's the one or she's the one who empowers everyone to share and participate, especially the constituents. The leader may choose to be in charge of handling the transitions between different parts of a meeting. The leader helps keep the conversation on track if it gets a little off, and then to wrap things up as needed. And the leader will help the team settle on an appropriate supporting ask for the meeting. We'll get into that in a little bit. And to make sure that everyone's on the same page with what that supporting or secondary request of the member is. So a little more on the roles. Depending on the size of the lobby team, an individual might even fill multiple roles. Everyone's encouraged to participate, but you want to give deference to that constituent, as we said. So one role is that of the appreciator. Usually at the beginning of the meeting, we have a lobby team member who shows appreciation for something that the member of Congress has accomplished. And if possible, that should be the constituent doing that appreciation. Always nice to set the meeting off on the right foot. And We also have a time monitor. It used to be called it a timekeeper. And this is the person who keeps the meeting on time, asks how much time there is for the meeting, and signals to wrap things up. But the time monitor now is also asking to watch for the percent of time the CCL team talks versus the MOC, the member of Congress, or the staff person for the member of Congress. And our goal there is 50-50. The time monitor also tallies the number of open-ended questions that our team asks, and we track that in the minutes. The note taker is the lobby team member who takes the notes, and if possible, the note taker should be fairly experienced. This person should be able to follow the thread of the conversation and especially capturing what's said by the member or the staffer. And then the same day or within 24 hours, those notes should be submitted by the note taker with an online form. Now, during the discussion, all the lobby team members are encouraged to participate, especially, again, constituents. The asker is the person, the lobby team member, who presents our CCL purpose and our, quote, ask. And if possible, that should, again, be the constituent who has a strong grasp of our policy and its wider implication and ripple effects, especially within the district. And that asker leaves our one-page primary ask behind. That's our handout, our one handout. Then there's a deliverer, and that's the team member who's responsible for bringing in any constituent comment forms or constituent letters, postcards, endorsement letters from community leaders, that sort of thing. And then for follow-up, we want to have someone assigned if there's follow-up to do for sending materials, resource materials, and sending a thank you card. If the person doing the follow-up is not the liaison, he or she should coordinate follow-up items with the liaison soon after the meeting. For instance, if the member is asking for some particular resource information. A couple of other things here that we wanted to include, or you might want to include in your meeting, is to assign a photographer. It's easy to forget, and it's really great to have a photograph after your meeting. A lot of times members will take it right outside in the hall with the American flag and their nameplate on the door. Then also another thing you might assign is an observer, a team member designated to put aside any agenda outcomes and just listen for underlying needs that the member or the staffer might be bringing forward. If they hear something that's missing or sounds like a place to get more understanding, they might ask about it. They might ask, tell us more about that. Finding that the opportunity to clarify things often brings about really more understanding, deep understanding, and really helps the member or the staffer feel fully heard. So prior to the meeting, you want to research your member. It's great to script out what you think the member might be thinking. Before you head into the meeting with your team, it's a good idea to discuss the importance of letting the member or staffer talk the most. Allowing silence is actually a good thing. We get pretty passionate in meetings, and we don't need to jump in with more information. We need to actually allow the member time and space to think. Sometimes staffers in particular might be pretty quiet, and you want to see if you can get them to share what they're thinking. And if you ask for permission, that's also a really great way of asking a question and getting them to talk. You also might want to redirect if the group happens to be talking too much and you really want to get the staffers talking. So to give you an example, we're going to give you what Representative McKinley said in an actual energy and commerce meeting. This is a little bit of research that we did. It's actually helpful to watch some of those hearings and then actually script out how you think the conversation might go based on the research that you've done. So we're going to listen to about a 5-minute presentation that Representative McKinley did in a hearing, and I actually typed out the main points of what I heard so that I was prepared. We can also acknowledge the member before we go any further. It allows you to practice how you would restate what you heard the member say and how you would confirm the common values underneath the concerns you hear. So listen for what Representative McKinley says, and we'll point that out again after this section. So let's play the video. Again, this is from a Energy and Commerce Committee meeting. And we'll listen to his testimony, and then we'll see you after that. We'll talk about it after.
The gentlewoman yields back. The Chair now recognizes Representative McKinley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Powell, I'd like to have a conversation with you or some interaction with my remarks here. I think we've heard on the panel so far, most Republicans and Democrats agree that there is the climate's changing and the industrial activity is a major contributor to that. But I think the reinforcement is that we strongly disagree with solutions on how that might be. Would you agree that America acting alone is going to make a difference to the global environment?
It will not.
Thank you. Let me add to that. So I want to add that if anyone thinks that decarbonizing America is going to save the planet, whether that's 10 years or 20 years from now, they're delusional. Just 3 years ago, the EPA administrator said that her quote was, American action alone will not make the difference needed to impact global climate change. The Cato Institute came out and said that decarbonizing the United States would lower the global temperature by just 0.1 degree Celsius by the year 2050. But without this global commitment that everyone seems to be ignoring, this is what we're having to deal with. Do we really think, any of you on this panel, that if we decarbonize America, we won't be faced with severe weather, we won't have droughts, that the coastal communities won't be flooded? How can we say that without the rest of the world on board? Here's what's going on. A CRS has already published. This is what's going on, that China, from 2000 to 2016, China's increased its global emissions outside by 290%. India, 235%. And at the same time, America's reduced it by 16%. Are you familiar with the MIT report, their technology review report? That maybe you are? What that said was, and it was just a recent report that came out and said that unless India reduces its emissions, the result will be a climate catastrophe regardless of anything the United States does. I want to make sure we always keep this in context. We don't live in a vacuum. We don't live in a little microcosm here that the air of the United States is, if we can get it clean, we'll be fine. We involve from the globe on this. So we get down to what are our solutions or what are our options. So if I could from you, you and I have had this conversation. It appears that most of the Democrats, or people on the other side of the aisle, are saying that they want to use a hammer approach. Let's put more regulations, cap and trade, carbon taxes, some kind of hammer approach. Isn't that what you're hearing as well, primarily, Mr. Powell, that it's a hammer approach to solve this problem rather than a carrot and an incentives for innovation? Because think if we could do the innovation that we started last year with 45Q, with 48A, we could go on with that. Look, we've already talked about the alum cycle, the net power plant, the turbine efficiency. Aren't those things going to be really the best solution rather than the hammer approach? Because I'm assuming you're aware of the hammer approach throughout Europe, France particularly lately, with the yellow vests. What happened there when they rejected that notion of the hammer approach? So if we could just continue this innovation, this effort for research, I think many of you have talked about the research concept. If we could do that, we could, America, use our science and technology that we've used to do space, medicine, healthcare, all, and implement a strategy. Wouldn't it be something that we then could export to the other nations so that, like Mr. Worthington was saying, a billion to a million, billion five that don't have energy, if we develop the technology to reduce emissions, we could sell that, export that technology, and give them a chance for a better life? Wouldn't that make more sense than a hammer approach that people are rejecting?
All right, so let's take a pause here and really think about planning the meeting. We just heard a wonderful example of what to expect as we prepare for our conversation with Representative McKinley. Chances are a lot of members, wherever you might be from, have more of a concern in taking action on climate change. But this is a great example to highlight, even with Representative McKinley, where there's a lot of opportunities for common ground and to be able to zoom out and not be caught off guard about where we might disagree, but instead really key in on how we can build those bridge issues and where we can use them to have a chance to provide perspectives and gain deeper understanding. I think another key area to emphasize is that it's really important that we practice not giving too much information and to instead think about these meetings as an opportunity to build trust. So we've taken these notes, we've highlighted a lot of the main points. It's helpful to script out the meeting. You want to start again by thinking about ways to build out that appreciation that you use to launch the discussion. You want to make them leave with feeling like they want more information rather than feeling overwhelmed or stunned with the amount of content we crammed into 20 minutes. And I can't underscore enough, you know, even though these hearings are long or even though they might be hard to find, if your member's on a committee, it's really worth listening to their sections or their areas where they have participated or finding other areas on social media or speeches that are online, especially that are germane to climate and energy policy, to get a picture of what they care about, what their concerns are, how to anticipate some of their talking points around where they may have a real lack of need for action in their minds on this topic. It's also really good to point out in this case, again, that Representative McKinley gave us two trusted sources that he had, both the Cato Institute and MIT. So weave in those sources in your own preparation for how you want to highlight your response. It's also really key to step back for a moment and think about how you can frame yes or no questions that are pretty simple, yes or no, to how they can be more open-ended. A what, a where, a why, a how question to get that dialogue flowing rather than just a simple back and forth. And then I also just want to say, some people are king of this. I know Marshall is one of them. It's okay to be silent. Silence is okay. Silence generates reflection and allows the member or that staff member to move forward most as well. While counterpoint may work well for TV ratings, it's not necessarily productive in our meetings. Just know that it isn't a debate. That can be actually very counterproductive. And the whole goal is to get to that second date. So let's think about actually putting this into practice with some key ways that we can plan out some questions on how to ask these open-ended questions and have balanced listening in our meetings. So before we begin, we want to walk through these five steps to balance your listening with providing information. And that first one, and for each of these, I'll give a response example, but you want to reflect back something that you hear in the form of a question and then connect on shared values. So this could be something like, I'm glad to hear that you're thinking carefully about other countries' emissions. It really sounds to me like it matters to you as well to drive down our global emissions. You then want to build off of that response to really listen to what they say and come back with anything that you really highlight you can agree with. For example, I agree with you. We need to spur innovation. America is a leader in space technology and medicine, or innovation is needed so that other countries can be effective in reducing emissions. You name it, there's lots of ways that you can return back, even in this small little nugget of a conversation in those common agreement areas. You then want to ask permission to share your own point of view and connect back to that agreement. So for example, something like, may I tell you what I understand about, how the Energy Innovation Act makes me feel comfortable about it? Some kind of natural segue. If they agree, chances are they will, especially if you ask nicely, then you're more open to go down to actually share a couple of specifics and really have them be in an open space to consider what you're going to say rather than feeling closed off or not interested really in having that dialogue built out. Now, again, if they're resistant, you want to fall back to that rapport building and build out kind of an earlier one or two step to be able to have them be more actively supportive and talk forward on how you can actually build out agreement. For example, you could share your perspective. If they do find interest, highlighting some of the key points on our trainings about the border carbon adjustment, especially that intersection of how it will bring the rest of the world along and really help reduce emissions through trade policy with India and China. You could also focus on some of the recommendations we give in our responding to public questions resource about really emphasizing big picture information. Whatever it is, the helpful way to really close this section is to make a few points and then follow up then with one or, you know, a couple of open-ended questions to find out how well they're receiving that information. You could ask anything from, you know, what are your thoughts about a carbon border adjustment satisfying your concern as a conservative, to, you know, how do you think your decision, you know, or your concern about international agreements would be impacted by the passage of a strong carbon fee? You know, you may even ask, you know, how would it affect your decision to look out for this, especially lower income people in your own district, so that we could back off and show concern as constituents for West Virginia in this case. The key thing, regardless on any of these steps, is just to continue listening, to continue reflecting, and to share small bits of information at a time, and then pause. You want to give them some things to think about and interact with, to really ask questions, to engage where they might be at. And again, keep in mind that it could take several conversations. You're not going to win anyone over immediately with that first one-off. You don't have to snow them over with a rousing 10-minute speech. The key thing is you want to identify early on where that other person might be in Yale's Six Americas. You know, for example, are they alarmed about climate change? Are they cautious or doubtful? And then really your goal should be moving that other person up the continuum from wherever they are in a stepwise fashion. You know, we risk triggering actually firing a backfire effect if we push people too rapidly, too insistently, you know, too insensitively to where they might be and how that dialogue can actually advance them forward. And I'll pass it back to you, Amy.
Thanks, Brad. All right, well, one final slide to review before we begin our mock meeting. CCL suggested our suggested meeting outline is pretty simple. There's a beginning, there's a middle, and an end. So that's pretty simple to remember. And we're going to discuss each segment, and then we're going to pause and take some questions from you all in between those that three sections. So what we're going to do now is demonstrate an actual meeting. I'll narrate the demonstration. We'll stop at certain points and debrief. I'll play the meeting leader, who happens to be a constituent of Congressman McKinley's, and Brett's going to play the role of Congressman McKinley. So what we'll do is we'll go through the beginning, the middle, and the end of our initial meeting. Our meeting is with him. He's from Wheeling, West Virginia, in case you're not sure. And the agenda is really broad because we're going to say that this is our first meeting. So we want to establish trust. We want to show respect and appreciation and feel each other out. Since this is the first meeting of a long-term relationship, it's just not a one-time event. So it's just the beginning. Of course, we want to advise Congressman McKinley on our policy and tell him that we're going to create political will for the district, but we need to be prepared to do a lot of listening, and we'll show you how to move things forward for future meetings. And so here we go. So hello, my name is Amy Bennett with Citizens Climate Lobby. First of all, Congressman McKinley, we want to acknowledge how busy you are and how appreciative we are that you were able to carve out some time for us today.
Well, it's great to see you so engaged in the political process, Amy. I know you came from our great mountain state to visit, and I'm happy to meet with you.
Thank you, Congressman. We know it's a busy day, so how much time do you have for us today?
Well, I do actually have a committee meeting in 20 minutes, so that means I can give you 15. You'd think that they would have given me an office actually somewhere close to where my committee meets, but I'm stuck over here in Rayburn while the committee meets in the Longworth building. I guess that's how government works.
You all do a lot of walking here in D.C. Well, again, my name's Amy, and I'm a constituent of yours living in Wheeling, West Virginia, and I'm a school teacher. I'm here today because I'm worried about the kind of world the kids I teach will grow up in, and I want to do my part and make it as safe as possible for them.
Well, good to know your background, Amy. You might know that I actually served for 14 years prior to Congress in West Virginia as legislator, fighting for school children and for seniors, and I do agree that government should exercise its powers to look after our most vulnerable citizens. I really actually admire you for devoting your life to educating our kids. And I know our federal government continues to screw this up by trying to impose its will on our local school districts.
Well, thank you for the kind words, Congressman. We'd like to start by telling you how much we admire your bipartisan work to introduce legislation that protects retired miners' pensions from the state. My family's been a part of that proud tradition, and your work means that my elders will be looked out for after the hard work they gave.
Well, thank you for recognizing that, Amy. And you also know it's important for me, as all West Virginians, that if they actually work hard, then they'll be able to retire comfortably.
That's fantastic. Since we have just a few minutes, Congressman, let me briefly tell you why we're here, and then we'd like to hear your thoughts on our policy proposal. Our purpose is to create the political will for a livable world. Back home in Wheeling, we're working to create the political space we know that you'll need to support our policy. Over the past couple of months, we've gathered letters and postcards from your constituents and endorsements from community leaders in Wheeling. Here's a stack of 120 letters from your constituents and an endorsement for our policy, the Energy Innovation Act, from Regional Hospital in Central West Virginia. Our ask for you is to support a bipartisan bill that puts a steadily rising fee on fossil fuel emissions and returns all the revenues back to American households. It's good for people, the economy, it's effective at managing the risks we face with our changing climate. So seeing how this is our first meeting with you, how about if we start with hearing your thoughts on climate and energy policy? Okay, so let's do a pause here and recap that introductory section. We started by thanking him for the meeting, asked how much time he had, introduced ourselves, showed appreciation and delivered our purpose, our letters, our postcards and endorsements, and we presented very briefly our ask. Notice how quick that was. Every meeting's different, so you adapt to the situation. For example, this might be your 10th meeting, so formal introductions might not seem necessary. Or maybe the member only says they have 10 minutes, so you have to cut some of this out. We're demonstrating a suggested outline, but once the conversation starts, you need to kind of read the room and demonstrate being adaptive. And that's, you know, having the ability to perceive and understand what's happening in the moment and to be able to adapt and react to challenges as they happen. So being adaptive means you're not only listening to the words being said, but also the tone of voice and the body language. So we need to remain flexible and just practice good listening. One thing we didn't do here was take his bait and go off topic. The congressman has some strong thoughts on the federal government's role in local education. So we want to stay on topic since we only have 15 minutes. We also want to talk more about this. We have an opportunity for you to learn more about this in a separate training that Brett does on handling difficult situations. Also note that the ask is direct and clear and specific. Our primary ask is always going to be the same, so it's not worth testing the waters here. The worst possible outcome is you leave and they have no idea why you're there, so you get that brief ask in at the beginning. Note how concisely I checked in with the office about the Energy Innovation Act, even if it's your 10th meeting. Refreshing them with two sentences about the policy is really strongly suggested to avoid any potential confusion about that.
A bit, but let us return to our heroes. Where we last left them, Amy had just asked Representative McKinley his own thoughts about energy and climate policy, and here is where we'll pick up. Well, I can't say that I've actually heard much about the need to do something about the climate or global warming. You know, I think I know the actual mood of, you know, my constituents in West Virginia. We've got a strong coal sector, but you know, when it comes to energy policy, Amy, you can put me in the all the above category. I think climate change is a problem, but America cannot do this alone, and we have to get the rest of the world involved. The people of West Virginia will not bear this burden on their back, and they've sent me here with a clear message. Stop the federal government's overreach. We do not like the hammer of regulation.
So what I'm hearing you say is that both the economy and the environment are important to you. It's not one or the other. Is that a fair assessment?
Sure, yeah. I mean, a lot of things are said about me because I'm putting our country first, but this environmental agenda isn't good for business.
Well, we can certainly appreciate being unfairly labeled. I mean, we're often portrayed as being anti-business, but nothing could be further from the truth. We, like you, want the economy and the environment to flourish. Have you been briefed on the Energy Innovation Act legislation?
Well, I know my aide has actually reviewed in detail, Amy, but why don't you tell me a bit about it?
Well, what we're proposing is, and then I go on to explain the Energy Innovation Act, and then I ask, how does this sound in comparison to the regulations sought by the previous administration?
Well, let me be clear. Regulations we know kill jobs here in West Virginia, and for what? We impose additional costs on Americans, and I don't see how these rules will stop global warming. If America lowers its emissions, it won't solve the problem alone. So you would have to be delusional to think that it would stop floods or drought.
Well, actually, the United States is in a position to lead the world. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me take a step back here and make sure I understand your question. Are you concerned about the economic effect locally of what might happen if the United States takes strong action without other large emitters following?
Absolutely. We do not live in a vacuum. Look at China and India, right? Their emissions have gone up 200, 300% in the last 20 years. U.S. has gone down. Unless India actually reduces emissions, that MIT study has shown that we should expect major climate perturbations, if you will, regardless of U.S. action.
Well, I'm glad you're thinking carefully about other countries' emissions. It sounds like it matters to you to drive down global emissions. When I first became concerned about the climate, I struggled with this as well. May I tell you what I found out about the carbon border adjustment aspect of our proposal that put me at ease?
Sure. Put me at ease, too.
Well, Congressman McKinley, knowing your economic background, I think you'll appreciate what we've learned. The Energy Innovation Act includes a carbon border adjustment that our legal experts assure us complies with the World Trade Organization's international trade commitments. It would impose a tariff on other countries that don't have a similar carbon fee in their country to ensure protection for our domestic manufacturing. This adjustment incentivizes these other countries with dirtier energy mixes to clean up their own air and charge their own fee, which in turn would lower their emissions. What are your thoughts about a carbon border adjustment satisfying your concerns?
Well, any policy would need to be rock solid in getting other countries to actually go to the table and clean up their own act. I don't know how this actually works quite yet, but I'd be curious to find out more.
Okay, let's pause. I could go into the details, but let's pause and kind of recap that middle part. First of all, did you notice when I caught myself after giving an immediate answer without really listening to the representative? One of the goals we have tonight is helping you all feel ready and comfortable with pulling yourself back, because this can happen a lot. It sure has happened with me a lot. So how would you handle it if someone else does it? It's important to practice finding a tactful way to do the same thing if another member of the group jumps in without asking permission to proceed. For instance, you might say, I think it's important, Brett, that Congressman McKinley clarifies his thoughts before we go any further. Is that okay with you? You might practice that ahead of time or even remind everybody before going into the meeting of being careful about this. Notice what we didn't do here. We didn't correct him or take him to task for his position on climate or any other statements. It's obvious that we see things differently. But why start with something that will put us into a situation where one of us has to be right and the other person has to be wrong, right? So instead, doesn't it make sense to listen and ask additional questions so we can start to find the common ground and build the relationships from there, like being caring for the energy and the economy and the environment? So notice how many questions were asked. What we're trying to do is draw out more information so we can discover where that common ground is and also find out where there might be misconceptions. Also notice how we asked for permission to proceed. Would you like to take a look at that now? Would you like to hear what we found? That kind of question. I'm trying to find a bridge so that we can find a way forward that works for Congressman McKinley. It's clear he doesn't see the urgency of addressing global warming the same way we do. He's already revealed to us how he feels, and we've done our homework as well. So you move on just trying to find that common ground. It's also evident from the responses to my explanation of the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act and my question that McKinley's pretty fixated on America's actions alone being insufficient. We heard him say that in the tape. But rather, I explained how we could get other countries to lower their emissions. So again, I didn't put him into a situation where he's where he's a loser for not listening or understanding, but rather restating his statements than to enable him to open up to listening further. So keep in mind, this may not be a meeting where we try to change his mind or go into the details of the border adjustment, but rather focus on developing trust by showing our listening skills. And each meeting is going to be unique, and after your first meeting with the office, you'll often have a specific agenda or points to cover, like from this meeting that you want to cover in the next meeting. Don't be afraid to say, you know what? That's an important issue you raise. I'd like to gather for some more information. Can we talk about what a transition to a clean energy economy would look like with the Energy Innovation Act at our next meeting? All right. Well, let's demonstrate how to wrap up a meeting. A meeting can draw to an end in a couple of ways. The timekeeper, you know, checks his watch, notices that there's 5 minutes, or we can pick up body language. One of the most common is when a member actually closes their notebook. When you realize that's happening, try not to squeeze in any more discussion. There's going to be another meeting. Part of the follow-up will include whether or not they would be open to a meeting again. You could ask that in our next meeting, we discuss more of your concerns. For instance, if they had questions about small business impacts and regulations, that you might suggest that for the next meeting. You might say, hey, we have several studies on that. Would you be interested? Would you like me to send you that? Would you like me to bring it to the next meeting? So we'll go ahead and resume our little scenario, and I'll start off. Congressman, I see that we're nearing the end of our time with you. I think it would be important in working together ahead to understand the next steps you'd like our local group to do, and would you be willing to introduce a bill that puts a fee on carbon and returns the net proceeds to American households?
Well, I think it's a novel approach that you have. As you can imagine, I do have some reservations. I'd like to continue to find out more about how this affects especially the pocketbooks of West Virginians.
I understand. This is our first meeting, after all. We have a study called the Household Impact Study, and it has data for West Virginia's 1st District. We'll be sure to send it along so you can see how the dividend would affect the residents at various income levels in the district. We'd be delighted to sit down with your staff and review those details and more about the Energy Innovation Act and answer any questions you might have and see if there might be anything that'll prevent you from co-sponsoring the bill. Is there anyone in the district whose support is important to you that we might speak with in the district?
Well, first off, I'd be delighted if you continue to work with my staff. Thank you for that offer. It seems like we actually got the easier task here. If you're actually going to speak with people back home, then I might recommend you speak with Mayor Lean. He's a former utility CEO, and he's somebody that I look to on these issues regarding energy policy.
Absolutely. Thank you for that recommendation. Like we said earlier, we're trying to make it easier for you to support our policy, so we'll make an appointment to see the mayor. I'm going to leave you with this one-page ask, and how would you like for me to follow up with additional materials in the future?
You can follow up with Joanna here via email.
Congressman, one last thing before we leave. Would you mind telling us with whom you enjoy working with on the other side of the aisle?
Well, as you know, there's a lot of feelings of ill will around here, but I do try to work across the aisle on many topics.
That must be frustrating. But is there anyone you've gotten to know?
Senator Schumer and I actually sat next to each other on the plane the other day. He's not as bad as he seems on TV.
Okay. So that's the end of our demonstration for the initial meeting. So let's switch gears and discuss some final considerations and then take time for discussion. We do want to consider post-meeting plans. You want to go outside in the hall, step a little bit away from the door so that they're not hearing you in the office, review your notes and make sure everyone's on the same page with what you heard, assign someone to submit the minutes online that can do that within about 24 hours. We don't want to lose those. And confirm who's doing the follow-up and who's going to send the thank you note. Those are the things literally you do just down the hall from the office. And then the person who can submit needs to have obviously internet access and be able to submit those. For many of you on the line here, might be your first meeting and you might feel somewhat nervous or just kind of worried about this. And that's really important to acknowledge. But also, you want to move through it because you've got just as much right to be there as any one of the constituents in the district, and your voice matters. So in order to alleviate any of those feelings, just keep in mind another important meeting element that's in play. We're in the relationship business. That's one of our strengths. So never underestimate the power of injecting a little personality and fun in with the staffer or the member of Congress. Say you find out the staffer grew up on a ranch. Go ahead and ask if he knows how to wrangle cattle. If your member of Congress went to a rival school, bring it up, you know, in a kind of a fun way. Another thing you could do is ask them about the pictures or the displays in their offices. Those are usually things they're very proud of. And if this is your first meeting with a staffer, then ask them to introduce themselves at the beginning of the meeting and find out a little bit about them. More personal, playful moments will help you build a stronger relationship and make the meeting more fun for everyone. Brett?
Yeah, at this point, we've covered a lot of material. So what we'd love to do is just continue to stop for understanding. So I'd love to just kind of highlight, again, just a resurgent reminder of the importance of listening. You know, we can do that both with the space that we give in pauses with our words, but also with our body language, you know, really keying in as a team member, especially if you're a returning veteran for CCL, you know, pushing yourself to notice those opportunities if there seems to be an unasked question, and really being able to identify where they're at and help meet them there to move them forward. At this point, I also can't underscore it enough, even though you won't know, you know, some of the details of your schedule, including, you know, the key assignments, chances are you'll be meeting with your member of Congress, wherever you're a constituent of. And if you wanted to start putting this into practice right now, you're more than welcome to. Putting that time into practice with your own local team and build CCL's reputation. It demonstrates, you know, the respect that you've put the time in ahead of time. It develops that trust and rapport with each other and impresses those that you're meeting with. And it allows you also to be adaptive in your own time frame in the meeting so that you can be freed up to really listen and be flexible rather than rigidly following something where you're not really prepared or nervous about because you haven't done that legwork ahead of time. So the importance of practice can't be overstated enough. All right, so to close tonight, here's a final slide to help us review. So you want to introduce and connect first off as a fellow resident of wherever you are and get them talking about themselves by asking them to share a little bit more, listening for values along the way so we can establish common ground. Then as you transition to making that strong, direct primary ask, use your own words. You know, put in your own words to address what you think your member of Congress's frame of concern might be. You know, for example, Congressman McKinley was concerned about regulations in small business. So connecting on how the Energy Innovation Act will empower Main Street economies in West Virginia and provide that predictable nature of really being able to have a strong price signal to drive innovation, ways that you can help connect. You also want to ask more questions in the interaction again throughout the meeting to draw out information and find out what they do and not do, what they do and don't understand about our policy. And then lastly, as you advance in addressing and responding and further clarifying the concerns that they raise up, make sure to keep practicing asking for permission to proceed. Asking that permission to proceed prepares us, or prepares them rather, to hear what we have to say. You want to key in on identifying those next steps and especially find out what we can be doing more of in the district to make it easier to support our policy and action on climate change in general. And then thank them for the time as the meeting wraps up and be sure to debrief. Say that if you have any questions, here are Amy and I's contact information as well as the forums link where you can pose anything on Community 2 with questions or search through some of the prior keywords for what people have actually asked in the past. People to be able to, you know, learn from each other here, the wisdom of the crowds. So at this point, we'll close by just saying CCL is truly a grassroots organization, and the only way that we succeed is due to the leadership and the efforts that all of you on the line and listening in day in and day out. And so to close, there's no more appropriate way to honor the impact that we're making by highlighting a quote from a new CCL volunteer from last year's year-end appeal. They say this: "Thank you for your efforts to introduce responsible and innovative legislation and your actions that engage legislators in meaningful and responsible communication and education about the real threat of climate change. We hope that you found tonight's webinar useful. We look forward to seeing many of you in DC, and we look forward to working together to build the political will for a livable world. Have a wonderful night, everyone.